G'day, Alan Langer here. They reckon the Big Breakfast with Marto, Robin and the Moon Man is lifting podcasting to new heights. I reckon they could use a bit of a boost from Height for Hire myself. Call 1-800-HEIGHT or go to heightforhire.com.au.
So if you like kebabs, this has been the week for you. Another kebab segment on today's catch-up.
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure if after you've listened to that you could say in all good consciousness that it's actually helping you when you eat a kebab.
I think the rule of thumb is if you eat a kebab, that's it for the day. You can consume nothing else.
But what does that say to you if you used to have the late night kebab?
It means that it's
just
sitting in your stomach, not going anywhere.
Well, we found a word they're overusing way too much on My Kitchen Rules.
I'm not saying it.
No, don't say it.
Don't say it.
It's the world's most hated word. You don't want that. And Moon has a very unhealthy obsession with something that we addressed.
You say unhealthy. I say healthy. I think it's just good, honest family fun.
I don't think they'd say it's healthy.
It is a fetish, though.
If you're home alone and one of these came on the TV screen.
I might kiss the TV screen.
You're weird.
Pants down.
No, that's enough.
Oh, how dare you?
Don't watch Jurassic Gregory Park Martin. With the Moon Man. Loves them dinosaurs, but that's another story. Enjoy the catch up.
Yesterday on A Can of Worms, we really tackled a massive issue, and that is a kebab a breakfast food? Mm-hmm. It was off the back of me saying, I think that the best time of the day to eat a kebab is when you're stone cold sober first thing in the morning, because you need that dexterity to wrestle that bad boy. And there was a lot of people, we found out, use the kebab as a breakfast food.
Yes, most definitely. Have one for Smoko.
Yeah, with the Moon Man here, I'd have one for breakfast.
When you're at the food court and there's nothing else to have, kebabs are great, but kebabs are especially good at 3 a.m. once you finish at the pub.
Yeah, I'm with Moon on this one. When I was unemployed looking for work, I would have a kebab for breakfast probably 3 or 4 times a week. In the end, I didn't even need to order. I'd just walk up to the counter and they'd start making it for me.
Now, we are now wondering about the nutritional value of a kebab, and we're joined by a nutritionist from Tree of Life, Desi Carlos. Good morning, Desi.
Good morning.
Desi, a lot of people agree that you should be able to eat kebabs during the day, but we do wonder whether they're any good for us, are they?
Oh, wow. That's a loaded question.
Let's break it down, because there's the flatbread in there, the pita bread.
Yeah, you've got, the flatbread's good.
Lettuce and tomato.
Good.
Garlic sauce and a chili sauce.
Okay. Chili sauce, good.
Garlic sauce, not so good.
Well, what we're talking about here is where are the calories actually coming from? So, unfortunately, that meat that's being cooked is held together by fat. That's why it's staying in one little position up on the vertical grill. So, when we talk about calories overall and looking at, that garlic sauce, which is where the majority of the calories coming from, plus that meat, then we've got the cheese. So, unfortunately, kebab is about double the calories of a meat pie, say, for example.
Hey, Desi, wow. I had one yesterday with chips in it as well.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. 3 times as much calories than a pie.
So,
now, that's not to say that a pie is healthy, though. So we'll put that into perspective as well.
Now, sometimes you get the composite meat where it's just one big chunk, and then sometimes you get the layered lamb where they've, one piece on the other. And is that still pretty fatty meat as well?
Definitely. Unfortunately, that sort of cooking of the kebab is doesn't matter how and what you get, you're going to have quite a bit of fat there. And essentially when I'm talking about a kebab, we usually say that the horizontal cooking of the meat and chunks of meat are the best type. So a lot of, Greek kind of kebab shops will certainly have that style as opposed to the vertical, which is, you can tell, all the meat
A burger would be better for you, technically, than a kebab.
Yes, a steak burger would be even better again.
Yes.
Okay, so here's my question, because we've mentioned burgers, we've mentioned kebabs, we've mentioned pies. They're all great smoko-type food. If you could pick the ultimate in good calories and good nutrition for a smoko, what would it be?
Oh, definitely I'd go the steak burger and just hold the cheese. So that's where the calories come from. And another good option is a toasted sandwich, obviously, like ham and salad would be good as well.
Desi, I don't like the tone of voice when you talk about calories. It's like you talk about them like they're not a good thing. Now, just in terms of breakfast, can we just compare a bowl of muesli, a good bowl of muesli with some dried fruit and nuts in it, to a kebab?
You're not letting the kebab thing go, are you?
What's the difference in calories that you seem so down on?
I, w-
I'd like to say that a lot of people think that muesli and milk is a really great option. And interestingly enough, even a good quality muesli toasted with nuts and fruit with, you know, full cream milk on it has still got just as many calories as a pie, you know. So really the idea is that we would pick a muesli that is untoasted, and you might want to go for a smarter white milk, which tastes exactly like full cream milk but only has half the calories. So essentially, yes, muesli and milk can be good, but the idea of just having toasted muesli with full cream milk.
Eat the cardboard packet.
In well, your face, muesli.
That sounds like bad Desi. News for kebab lovers. Desi Kylos, a well-respected nutritionist from Tree of Life. I will say, though, that yesterday our listeners, 90% of them did think that it was a nutritional breakfast food. So, and you're only one person. So, I mean, it's very hard to argue with those numbers, Desi.
She is an authority, though.
Hey, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon.
No worries. See you guys.
If you watched any of the Commonwealth Games on Channel 7, you would have seen them absolutely pushing their MKR great moment, where the first time ever a couple of contestants get kicked off and sent home. Well, that great moment that they were teasing actually went down last night.
Guys, it's Kim and Sung's house.
I don't care.
They're home.
Shut up, Josh.
Teams.
Shut up, Josh.
Have respect.
Stay out of it. Don't let me come for you. Stay out of it. And I'll come for you, and I'll come for you, and I'll come for you, because you're all disrespectful assholes.
Teams, please, please.
That's what you are, assholes.
Enough.
Things have got too out of hands. This is a cooking competition, and this behaviour is unacceptable. Sonia and Adil, you're excused from the table.
No worries.
Cooking.
Yeah. They got in a cab and went home.
Why did things get so out of hand, Robin?
They were full on. Like, they were really abusive. It was uncomfortable television to watch, and I'm sure tonight we'll find out that they've actually been kicked off as opposed to just asked to leave.
I was watching with Kath last night. She's back in the saddle.
Yeah, well done, Kath. Me too.
The two Vietnamese refugee girls, how beautiful are they? They did the cooking. They were so good. They were restaurant
so
magnificent good.
Yeah, see, I'm the voice on. Isn't on, so we're all joining on MKR. No,
what's the name of the bloke in the white jacket who thinks he's French?
Manu.
He is French.
Is he?
What do you mean?
Of course I'm French.
Is he from Vanuatu?
No.
Or is he actually from proper France?
He's from France.
Okay.
Anyway, why?
Look this Pete up Evans. Whenever you want. Actually, Moon, have you? I asked you to look it up a second ago. The world's most detested word in the English dictionary.
In England, America and Australia, the world's most hated word is moist.
Yep, I knew it'd do it to you. Girls hate it being used. Well, Manu hasn't got that message yet.
That was just juicy and moist.
No, just because you said in a French accent does not make it any better.
Well, all right, what about the world's most famous food dodger, the vegan Pete Evans? He starts using it too.
They were moist, they were fatty.
No, it's worse in French.
Yeah, moist and fatty.
That was just juicy and moist.
Absolutely right.
Every female's just turned the radio off.
I don't know why I don't like that word, but stop using it.
Okay.
And if you won't stop, I'll leave.
We are no longer Triple M. We are Moist FM, man.
Moist.
Stop Triple M.
Martha and the Squelchers coming up.
Guys, since I've started here at Triple M this year, I've got to know you a lot better, and I feel that this is a safe space where I can share things with you, like my fetishes. And
I'm happy to tear you apart.
That's not one of my fetishes.
Being torn apart by Marto. No, I don't think it's one of anyone's, really.
Thanks for the offer, Marto, but maybe we'll leave that one for the Christmas party.
Two or three drinks first. Righto.
No, I've always had a healthy obsession with newsreaders, and I think I was introduced to it by my father very early on. He used to really get quite enthused when a newsreader on the ABC, Sonia Humphries, would come on. He would go, gee, she's beautiful. And it's like, oh, what's Dad seeing in this newsreader?
What?
And so it was the gateway into newsreader fetishes. And so I've always had a bit of a newsreader fetish, not for the blokes on the, not for Peter Hitchener or any of those dudes, but I've always, well, it first started with Jan Event way back when I was a kid growing up in Melbourne. Jan Event read the news on Channel 10.
Oh, did she read the news?
And then she went
started,
to
yeah.
Oh, see, I never
and
saw
then she
it
went
that.
Across to A Current Affair.
Yeah.
And I was just completely enamoured of Jana Vent and always looked forward to hearing her say this.
Hello, I'm Jana Vent.
Yeah. And sometimes I'd answer back. I'd say, hi, Jana, I'm Lawrence. And
I'm 12.
And the conversation went no further than that.
I'm 12, Jana.
Can you come
and
over?
And I've got strange feelings.
Stitterings.
And then it moved on to Sandra Sully.
Hello, I'm Sandra Sully.
Oh, who doesn't love Suts? She is just a ripper.
Sorry, who?
Suts. Sandra Sully. Yeah. So gorgeous.
Have you
still
ever
is.
Met any of these?
Yes, I have met.
Oh, no.
I never met Jana.
I'm Did you go fan, fan weird?
I went a little bit fan weird when I've met Sandra Sully, but I've met her a couple of times going up to Sydney, or down to Sydney rather, to do what's it called? Not the Circle, Studio 10. Mm-hmm. And sometimes Suts is in makeup. It's like, hi Sandra.
I'm Lawrence.
Oh, it goes up a little bit. And I also share a love with this woman, with Brendo, Sharon Gadella. Brendo,
I'm Sharon Gadella.
Oh, Sharon Gadella, there she is. Yes, I lived provincially in New South Wales growing up, and that's when I knew I loved women, when I saw Sharon Gadella.
Well, you just have to go up Mount Cooper now and say hi.
I know, so close yet so far.
It's a big moment. But it all came to fruition for me when I met my on-air girlfriend. When I say my on-air girlfriend, she doesn't know that, but the love of my life.
Your TV set girlfriend.
My TV set girlfriend. On Monday, I shot an episode of Hughesy, We Have a Problem, Dave Hughes' show, and I was in Sydney, and just arriving back from New York City was Lisa Wilkinson, and she was at the airport, and I went over to her and I said, I'd met her once before on the Today Show, doing the panel there with Nikki Gemmel, and I went over and said, oh, hi, Lisa, and she's got a great memory. She goes, oh, hi, Lawrence. I was like, oh, she remembers my name. Hi, Lisa. And then I said, long time listener, first time caller, and she said, oh, we've met before, so that joke died. I could feel my head just turning red, and I said, anyway, what have you been up to? And she said, got back from New York, just interviewed Amy Schumer. I'm getting on a plane to go to Melbourne. And I ran out of things to say. Oh.
You should have asked her if Peter ever puts that bandana in with her whites or something like that.
No, that's not what you should have said.
That's what I should have said to her. So, Lisa, does Peter ever put his bandana in with your undies?
What about that Southwest Airlines plane yesterday with the hole in the side from the engine and the woman sucked out and pulled back in and dead and all the rest of it?
It's terrible because you just think, I also, like, they'd said someone had died and then they didn't confirm it was the woman, but I would imagine they caught her in the legs, but she still got sucked out of the plane, and then I don't even know.
They performed CPR when they pulled her in, Moon.
Yeah, because of the speed of the plane and the fact that she's, you know, outside the cabin, there would have been massive trauma, her smashing against the side of the plane.
Yeah, of course.
But also it would have been freezing cold. So,
and no oxygen.
Oh, yeah. Awful.
So the poor woman, yeah.
But did you see,
away.
On the other side of the coin, the plane got down safely, and the pilot was Tammy Jo Schultz, her name was, 56 years of age, former one of the first female fighter pilots in the Navy. So she's used to landing those planes, catching onto the hook onto the big aircraft
carriers.
Aircraft carriers. That was her life. So did you hear? Well, just everyone else who's missed it, listen to how calm she was. This is while she's talking to the air traffic control.
Is your airplane physically on fire?
No, it's not on fire, but part of it's missing. They said there was a hole and someone went out.
I'm sorry, you said there was a hole and somebody went out?
Whoa.
Yeah.
And then she had to land it. Imagine that.
And
calmness.
She did land it, and 149 people were on board, and 148 were okay. Mm.
And which is a huge effort. But, you know, we all go up in planes occasionally, and, you know, it's something that's on our mind.
What
all the time,
plane do you catch mainly if we're going Brisbane, Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, Melbourne, Brisbane, la la la? 737.
And that's what it was.
Boeing 737.
That is the right.
So, how many of our aircraft potentially could end up like that? We have Brian, who's an aircraft engineer with us. Hey, Brian.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Should we be worried?
No, I don't think we should be worried at all. There's over 250 of these things flying around Australia all day, every day, over 7,000 of them in the world. So they basically are the backbone of domestic passenger transport. I don't think there's anything to worry about. It's an isolated incident.
From your experience, Brian, looking at that engine, what do you see went wrong?
Oh, look, something's definitely gone wrong. I've seen some pictures that the media have released on the failure of the engine. It's definitely something in the fan area of the engine. The engine's got a containment mechanism to catch any debris or anything which should an engine fail. Doesn't look like that may have worked in this case. It's a rare failure. I've not seen anything like it before, but with the amount of aircraft that use these engines, it's rare, it's one-off. There's obviously an investigation going on at the moment, so until the results from that come out, it's impossible to say exactly what happened.
Right.
But it's an isolated, rare incident.
Brian, I remember a few years ago when they said we're going to outsource some of our maintenance. Is there been a decrease in the amount of work being put into our engines on our planes?
Definitely not in Australia. Definitely right. Not in the organisations that I've worked for. We're regulated very heavily and monitored very heavily by CASA.
Oh, okay.
And all the requirements for the aircraft maintenance is always met and exceeded in my experience.
And finally, Brian, for all of us passengers who get on planes, does it mean that we should sit in the aisle seat, not the window?
No, there's no unsafe area to sit in the aircraft. Wherever you sit, just enjoy the flight. It's highly unlikely that this will happen to you.
All right, makes us breathe a little bit easier. Brian is an aircraft engineer. Thank you for your insight, mate.
Not a problem at all, guys. Enjoy your day.
This morning on the show that's before us, on Luke Boner, there was a guy rang up, okay? And there's some pretty wacky people in the middle of the night who ring up Triple M.
Yeah, love them.
And truck drivers.
And a lot of truck. Well, they're not the wacky ones.
No, that's what I mean. There are wacky people and truck drivers.
There's only two reasons to be up at that hour of night. Either wacky or you are driving a truck. But this guy, I'll let you listen to it, but it started with, you know, some people go, oh, it's my first time calling, hello. Mm-hmm. Listen to how many times this guy has called. He's keeping a tally.
Good to be back on your show. Third time caller now. So I like old Corollas. That's my passion. I've got five old Corollas, 1979, around that era.
Why would you have a Corolla?
Corollas. I got a 79 and, oh, you should have heard it. Close your eyes and think of his yard.
No.
Oh, yeah.
That would drive
So that's
me back.
The thing. Are they just parked in the front garden, up the driveway, or does he have some special garage where they're all shiny? What's your vibe, Marto? Couple in the street?
I reckon tour on blocks with the grass growing as far as the whippersnapper won't reach underneath.
The kakayu grass just punching up through the wheel arches and into the window.
The Corolla's no MG.
That's why I wanted to play it. Like, you're not collecting Mustangs or something like that.
No, Porsches.
Corollas. What are you doing going around and picking them up from Lawn Bowls car park?
People are ringing you.
Don't be classist. It's like, you know, obviously he can't afford his Porsche collection, so he's gone, I want to collect cars. I'm going to collect a Corolla.
Oh, do you reckon this is about collections?
Yes, of course it is. He wants to be able to have a collection too.
Or maybe.
A working class man with his lovely Corollas. Yeah. A mustard yellow I'm seeing there, maybe a sunburn
Sorry,
orange.
Sorry, I did hear him. He had a two-door panel van Corolla.
Such a thing exists.
When was that made?
Wow. Well, now it's interesting because it's unique. Because here was I thinking that he's doing a community service and taking them off people's hands.
Yeah, I don't think they were just the rubbishy ones. He had some unique ones, yeah.
I can tell you this, no self-respecting girl's going to go, do you want to jump in the back? What have you... Corolla.
About you guys, you got any weird collections?
Well, maybe I'm going to reveal this for the first time on air, but I have got every copy of Vanity Fair magazine since 1994.
What happens in Vanity Fair?
Why are you laughing about that, Brendo?
Why?
Because I just, you know, I started reading it because I like the articles and, you know, that whole showbiz thing. And, you know, I'm very close friends with Bobby Shriekman.
Which one's Vanity Fair?
What do they do, Robin? Vanity Fair.
So Vanity Fair magazine's a showbiz magazine. It's like, you know, there's always somebody big and famous on the front cover. And
94.
Then they have those 20 pages of advertisements for Prada and
did someone give you a subscription?
Gucci.
Is that why it started?
Like, no, it started with a bit of an obsession with Warren Beatty way back in 94, and he was on the front cover with Annette Bening, and I decided to buy that copy and then bought another one, and then it got out of control.
Where do you keep them? In suitcase?
No, they're in my study at home. So basically a shelf can contain almost 12 years.
The thing that I find unique about that is not that you bought them, it's that you keep them. And any and anyone who does decluttering and people talk about obsessions you know, will say that the date of the newspaper or magazine that first starts a collection is often a significant moment in someone's life.
Oh, 94, how was it?
So that's really interesting because I've watched shows about hoarders before and, you know, there's some trauma and all of a sudden you start collecting stuff in order to basically protect yourself from further trauma.
Nest.
And, yeah, it's a nest that you create. Wow.
I collect handsaws. What would the declutterer say about me? You know, as in the cut timber, I've got about 30 of them.
You want to murder someone?
No, I've got them hanging around in my shed. And you
so
just look at them.
Hansels. Yeah. Oh, and what, you mocked my Vanity Fair collection? You're a mental.
My collection came from my father. Actually, I said it was 68. It wasn't. It was a movie from 1956, but it was the first movie that I ever saw. Now, you got to remember that in the early 70s when I saw it, we didn't have a TV at home. So for me to actually sit in a cinema and see a film for the first time was mind-blowing. Like, I was five, and Dad took my sister and I to see the movie Carousel with Shirley Jones. And I just remember watching Shirley riding this carousel horse and thinking...
As in a merry-go-round.
As in a merry-go-round and thinking, I have to have myself one of those. So that's what I collect.
Can you build one, Dad?
No,
so
well,
you have got carousels or carousel horses?
I've got everything. I've got an original 1911 carousel horse that came off a carousel in the US.
Is the stick still poking through it?
No, it's not. It's just the horse. But it's got the little wire, the little metal plates that attached it to the base of the carousel.
These things?
All over my house.
Oh.
And what other carousel gear have you got? Because I'm starting to feel so much better about myself now.
Yeah, he's just found his
little snow cones.
Handsaw boy over there. Snow cones?
Yeah, like little carousel snow cones and Christmas decorations. People often give me Christmas decorations of carousel. And then the only other thing that I collected was also my father's responsibility, was that he bought me a pair of red shoes. And from that moment on, I just love shoes. And I've got over 300 pairs of shoes.
Don't hang anything on me and my handsaws, my big collection, because mine are useful. I can actually use them. How are you going with the Vanity Fair? Oh, I think I'll cut something with it. No, you won't.
No, I have a look at it. I have a read of an article by, you know, Dominic Dunn or somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. Tony of Wynnum. What do you collect?
Vinyl records.
Oh, a lot of people do that. How many you got?
Oh, probably around 3,000.
Oh, Tony, where do you keep those?
Oh, in the cupboard. In the cupboard. So, haven't got a record player at the moment.
Oh,
that's a bit problematic. JP Hi-Fi sell them.
What do you do with them then? Nothing.
Oh, nothing at the moment. I played them a lot in the 70s and 80s. And, they just sit there and no one touches them.
Yeah,
I bet.
Into it, Tone.
James of Caboolture, what do you collect?
Hi, I collect 4X beer kegs.
Kegs?
Yep, beer kegs. Yep,
this is interesting. Where
How many, James?
I've got six, but if I have any more, the wife will leave me.
Are you using them as chairs or tables? What are you doing with them?
Just display pieces, really.
That's why she's leaving you.
And do you and your mates just stand around looking at them?
Oh, not really. It's just like a bit of a passion of mine.
Yeah, you tap them. Do you give them a tap as you go past?
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah. They're not full, though, are they?
No, they're not full, but one of them is the old school wooden ones, and they're very hard to find.
Okay, there you go.
Breakfast
well done.
Creek in the private bar.
Jason of Ipswich, what do you collect?
Lord of the Rings memorabilia. So, yeah, all the stuff that comes with Lord of the Rings, from, like, figurines. I've got over 250 figurines. All the books. I've got about 300 different versions of books from first editions, very rare ones, the swords, the rings themselves. All that sort of stuff.
Often it's a wife or girlfriend that puts the ceiling on the collection. Are you a single man, Jason?
No, actually, my wife helps me do it.
She's into it too.
That's good.
So how much money have you actually spent on this collection, do you reckon?
Oh, thousands. It'd be into the tens of thousands now.
Wow. Where have you got them? Special room?
Yeah, I've got my man cave down the front of the room in the study, and I display some of the rarer figurines there. And, got the TV, watch the footy, have a few beers, and, sit back and admire it.
Do you refer to your man cave as Middle Earth, Jason?
Well, actually, it's funny you say that because I have a bar room that I call the Green Dragon, which is one of the bars I use in it. So
good stuff, mate. You sound so happy.
Brisbane's Triple M Big Breakfast.